QSD, QSD. This is Mike WB6CLZ acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the K6BB repeater. 147.33 with an offset of 600 kilohertz and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of this repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Again, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call WB6CLZ. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call WB6CLZ. If Clint is out there with the satellite report. Clint, you there? K6LCS, WB6CLZ. Later. Tom is not available tonight. He's working on a project and has to work late so he can get the project finished tomorrow. So I've got it today. Anyway, what we're going to talk about tonight is a little article I found in the December QSD, page 97, under radio tips, and it's shopping for an antenna tuner. Many of you guys that use HF, eventually you'll probably run into a situation where you're going to need an antenna tuner. So hopefully this will be enlightening to the people that are in the free shopping or shopping mode for a nice tuner. Kind of get going into it. I do not have a roster, I won't be able to call a roster. Anyway, basically what an antenna tuner is it makes the radio happy. You've got an antenna out there, and the radio wants to see 50 ohms. I know we've talked about this before, but an antenna tuner will make it to where the radio is happy. And if it's in the right position, it'll do a little bit more than that. We'll get into that in a couple of minutes. Okay. Well, there are various types of tuners, and there is a myriad of different choices. There are lots and lots and lots of tuners out there available. But we can kind of narrow it down to about three basic types. The first type we'll run into is a manual tuner, and as the name implies, you operate these by twisting knobs and watching SWR, you know, the old-fashioned way that we all probably started out with, and they're probably among the least expensive, anywhere from $50 on up, depending on how much power, different types of accessories and which type of features you want on that. They can, from here to there and everywhere in between. I happen to have an MFJ-949 Versa tuner, which is good for 300 watts. I use that on my backup gear that I keep up in Big Bear if my primary radios go out. Break. Okay, and they're probably the least convenient to operate. If you're the kind of guy that stays on one frequency or near a frequency, they're really good for that. Otherwise, you kind of have to write down the dial settings and such, and if you're going to change bands, you've got to kind of touch it up and tune it for every band and every frequency move that you make. So they're a little bit of a pain to operate, but you know, they're reliable, they're inexpensive, and work pretty well. Okay, and then we run into, first of all, anybody have any questions about manual antenna tuners that I may be able to answer? Please come now, WB6CLZ for Tech Tuesday.
Mike.
Go ahead. Who's this? And give your call and name, please.
This is Ray, Mike, the basic TVZ. Something to note about like a the Versa tuner like you were talking about, it will bypass and you can put it in or out by just rotating the switch, and you can have more than one antenna coming into it. The Versa tuner accepts two different antennas, so you can go back and forth and tune two different antennas on HF for it. And it does give a balanced line conversion into the 50 ohm too also. Just want to comment there, Mike. Go ahead, the basic PBZ.
Spot, I appreciate that. And also it has a feature of a dummy load, and I believe the dummy load will handle up to 300 watts. So, yeah, it's a pretty nice little tuner, and they're inexpensive on the secondary market, usually $100 or less. So, yeah, pretty good deal for the money. Okay, well, next we run into the automatic tuners. Basically, LDG makes one, Yaesu, ICOM, MFJ makes a bunch of them. There's a lot of them available, and you just kind of have to go through and pick one with the quality and features that you like. Now, automatic means just that. You apply a little RF, and you push a button, and the tuner searches through the combinations of inductance and capacitance to get to that as close to that 50 ohm and 1.0 to 1 SWR as possible. I've got them. When I order my radios, my Elecraft radios, the KX3 and the K3, and the new KPA-100 amplifier that I just got yesterday has the antenna tuner on them, and they're all integrated in with the radios and work pretty well. But LDG has automatic tuners that are specifically made for specific radios and basically do the same thing. Except they're an outboard unit, and the ones that I have on my radios and a lot of the other radios are inboard, which makes it very nice. You don't have to carry around another package. I'll break for a second. And some of the models, like the ones usually built into radios, will detect the signal. No button required. They have memories. Once you tune it to the frequency, they follow. They're ready to go. And usually don't even need an RF. Once you go on frequency, they'll follow that. And they're ready to go. Let's see. Any questions or comments that I may be able to answer on automatic tuners, please come now. Come again and please give your name and call.
W6JET, name is Rob. Yeah, on your inboard tuners on your radios, they don't have much capacity versus the LDGs or the other ones. They'll tune just about anything, but the ones inside the radios won't tune quite as much. They have to be pretty close to resonant.
Ones that they use on the Elecraft, they figure about 10 to 1 is as high as it will match. I've matched a little bit higher. I have some areas on 160 on my loops that they will match. It just takes maybe three or four different hits on the tuner to get that to adjust. But yes, they are. Some of the and especially the MFJ 949, manual tuner, I can get a little bit better on that too. Yes, you're completely correct on that. Any other questions and comments on automatic tuners? Anyway, Tom has a lot more suggestions than I do. Well, let's go to the remote automatic tuners. These are pretty cool. They're designed to be outdoor. SGC is one of the ones that comes to mind as probably one of the better automatic tuners. Yaesu makes them for their gear, and also ICOM. Well, the nice thing about these is they're made to be outside. They're made to be close to your antenna. So these tuners will minimize the RF loss in the coax between the antenna and the station. And they basically the same. They operate when they detect RF or when they receive a command from the transceiver. I guess you can push tune or you know, you just key your mic or key to key a second, and they'll tune. I've never really had a remote automatic tuner, but they're pretty cool. I know a lot of sailboats use them on their ham radios, and a lot of boats where they have the antenna down at the stern or on the mast, and they have the tuner right at the base of it. I guess that a really, really nice matching. When shopping for a tuner, you want to be sure to check its impedance range. And then, Rob, that's what you were just talking about, is it's critical to match a wide array of different loads. Limited range tuners can really only handle a small mismatch of like 3-to-1 or less. Whereas a good wide range antenna tuner, like I said, on the Elecrafts and on a lot of the others, 10-to-1 is really within the realm, and sometimes a little bit more. Break. But also pay attention to the RF power rating on the tuner. Like if you had a tuner that's rated for 150 watts peak envelope power, PEP, you know, you're not talking about a continuous cycle. You're talking about a signal that's rapidly changing, and the power levels are only up to the 150 watt level on your voice peaks. So you don't really need the quality of the tuner that will handle that for sideband. Now on RTTY or CW, which are both considered 100% duty cycle, definitely RTTY and CW. If you hold the key down and send a little bit slower, you're going to get a pretty close to 100% duty cycle. An antenna tuner rated for 150 watts PEP probably won't handle 150 watts at 100% duty cycle. It'd be somewhere in the 80 watt range or something like that. And in the case, let's break here for a second. In the case of the tuner handling the power on a CW is considered a continuous wave. Now that on a tuner, that does not mean Morse code. CW means continuous wave, which means it's literally a 100% duty cycle. So if you plan to operate RTTY or any other 100% duty cycle modes, you definitely want a tuner that's going to handle the power. Break.
Mike?
Henry, I'm Ray. I'm always interested in comments and questions. Go ahead. WB6PBZ, WB6CL, Redwood Tech Tuesday.
One of the comments I was going to make is most tuners just tune down through 10 meters. Some of them tune through 6 meters, 50 megacycles, but they do not usually tune on 2 meters for most of the guys that they're listening. They're not used to it, you know, but if you're going to operate 10 meters with the tech license, you need to get a tuner then change your antenna, because the antenna be tuned to a certain frequency and you go up a little ways, it could help.
Very well it would. And yeah, this what we're talking about is mostly for HF. The tuners that come in my rigs and the ones that I've had, the outboard tuners, are usually, well, all of the ones I've had go up to 6 meters. And they can match my 160-meter horizontal loop, the 75-meter horizontal loop, with usually a 1.1-to-1, sometimes a little bit higher, but they're usually pretty darn good that way. And yeah, for VHF, they do have VHF tuners. MFJ makes them. But generally, you're staying within a lesser frequency range when you're using like a 2 meters, and you really aren't going to need it to be just perfect. And usually the transceiver won't fold back or reduce its power until you have a 2-to-1 SWR, and that probably won't be the case in most cases. Other comments or questions, please come now. I've kind of got caught off guard tonight, so that's really all I have for subject tonight. But if anybody wants to throw it up and discuss anything that I'm capable of, or any comments or anything, please come now, or else it's going to be a real short Tuesday. Come now. This is WB6CLZ.
Ian.
Go ahead. KD6LAN, WB6CLZ.
Yeah, Mike, anybody else out there listening, Mike, you know all the problems that I have in the garage with my handheld. I think the only reason I don't have it on this radio is because the antenna is up on the roof, up about 30 feet. But I've done a little bit of testing and what have you, and I've got three different handhelds by two different manufacturers that I can use, and they all have the same problem in the garage. Break for... Yeah, in the garage, the receive is almost non-existent when the fluorescent lights and the TV are on, and the transmit is almost as bad. I've narrowed it down to where the lights are not the entire problem. They are some of the problem, but most of the problem I've discovered is from my flat screen TV. Okay, cut this kind of short. Anybody else has this problem? I've also noticed, by the way, that the flat screen TV in the house, which is a different manufacturer, does not create the same problem on the handheld radios. I called the net last night from the living room with the football game on with one of the handhelds, and it worked fine. So evidently, for all you guys out there, you want to be careful what brand of flat screen TV you buy, and maybe check your fluorescent lights, if you have any fluorescent lights in the Radio Shack. With a handheld, you might want to be careful and check that out before you go putting them up.
Difference in the interference from your TV screens. The compliance with the federal regulations on that are strictly up to the, it's voluntary. And some people volunteer more than others do, I guess you might say. It's usually the reason that you have a lot of interference from your radios into some of these crappy TVs that they're making. They don't put the proper safeguards and shielding in because it costs a little more money. And a little more money for that is a little less money for the bank account. So you have to watch, and I don't think that there's anything you can do about it, really, because they put so much of that junk out that you just have to ask around about people that have different brands and check on the internet for people complaining. 86
PL. INW. Yes.
Yes, he's right. They save maybe 25 cents per set by not giving the good protection to it. But most people are in cable now, so that's less of a problem. 86 INW.
No, I have a
comment.
Type of TV is it? I know it's flat screen, but do you know?
Yeah, sorry, Mike. Somebody broke in there, and I didn't copy everything. Let me go ahead with what I have to say before the comment comes in. The big screen that I have in the living room, I bought at a major outlet, let's say. And it's LG. All my TVs are on cable, by the way, so there's no difference between them. The one that I have in the garage I bought at a radio outlet, hint, hint, type store up here in the valley. And it's a good TV. It has a great picture and everything. Lousy sound, though. I ended up having to get an additional speaker system to hook in line with it to get any kind of sound out of it. But the one in the garage seems to be the, I don't want to say cheaper of the two, but that's the only way to describe it. I think we have a comment out there.
Comment.
Yeah, hi Mike, this is Chip, W6POO. I just wanted to add to the flat screen interference. I have problems with my Wi-Fi system. I have to turn off the Wi-Fi when I'm doing anything on 2 meters. It interferes with the handheld as well as the mobile. And this is the 2.4 gigahertz router, so it tends to cause a problem as well. W6POO.
Jim, appreciate that. Bill, I have a question for you. Hopefully I've got it now. Hey, do you know what type of flat screen that is? Is it plasma? Is it LED? Do you know what it is?
It's definitely not plasma. The brand is Apex, and I believe it's an LED. I don't know for sure, but it's 110 pixel. Or no, I'm sorry, 1,080 pixel. 110, where'd I get that? Jeez, that'd be an awful lousy screen. But no, it's got a great picture. And like I say, other than the sound quality when I first got it was, sounded, a tin can would sound better, but it's okay with the aftermarket speaker system. But yeah, it's the only one that interferes with the handheld. And I could give you a demo, but I wouldn't be able to hear you if you were coming back at me.
Okay, Bill, yeah, because they've been having a lot of trouble on the HF in the ham bands with plasma TVs. I've been hearing a lot of that going on. One other question, Bill, while we're talking about your fluorescent lights. A while back we did a Tech Tuesday on that, and there was a filter for those lights. Did you by any chance get the filter and give that a try? KD6LAM, WV6CLZ with Tech Tuesday.
No, and what I've discovered is that even though the single pin doesn't seem to be the problem so much as the, I'm going to say the flat pin, whatever that is, it seems to be, if I turn off the TV, I can use the handhelds in the garage even with the lights on. I get a lot of snow and white noise. But it's still readable. I've been told that I have a little bit of white noise on the transmit side with the lights on. So what I usually do is if it's daylight, I walk outside or even turn the lights off. And the minute I turn the lights off, everything seems to go away. All the problems are solved.
Well, now I'll take off the ham radio hat, put on the electrical contractor hat. When on the bipin, that's what they call the little 4 foot floor. T12, probably the bigger ones, but and they have T12, TH, and now they even have T5s, which are the very small ones. Very efficient, the smaller in diameter you get, because it takes less current to light up the fluorescence. Yet they use phosphors in there that are the right kind to make it as bright or brighter than the old kinds. Anyway, if as long as those pins are lined up and making good connection, you know, it should, and I think you probably checked that, but that's something, the first thing to check, and it's pretty critical. If you look at the end of a fluorescent tube, you'll see a little indentation on it. Well, that has to be pointed directly down on most of them, unless they have the angle lamps. The lesser expensive, like the garage fixtures, they're at an angle. But that has to be the pins have to be seated in there properly. It has to be directly on those spring ends to make a good tight fit. And otherwise, you're going to get all kinds of little arcing, and the bulbs aren't going to last long. Ballasts aren't going to last long. So fluorescent lights have to be properly seated, or you're going to have problems like that. Let's see. Any other questions or comments? Please come now.
66 FJE, Zach and Sugarloaf. I don't know if this is more for antenna or if this is a power issue, but on my mobile unit, FT2500M, it works great and all, but when I plug in my cell phone to charge it, all of a sudden I can't hear half the stations out there. Weather Channel, if I'm, say, back in Holcomb Valley, I cannot hear the Bear repeater until I disconnect the charger from my cell phone. I was curious if I should hook in a filter, or if any of you might know what that is, the cause of that.
Power supplies in cell phones, some of the little switching power supplies, wall warts especially, and that's probably what your cell phone has, that type of a charger, and they are extremely noisy. Yeah, filtering is the best way. Sometimes you can get a little plug-in inline filter that basically have a couple of capacitors in there, and that will eliminate it. Sometimes not, though. The best thing to do is just keep it as far away from your equipment as you can, you know, maybe in another room, another part of the house or something like that. How's that, Zach?
Well, that sounds good. I will try that. Yeah, it's, unfortunately, they're right next to each other since it's in my vehicle on a mobile unit. But, yeah, that's just what I have to deal with for the moment, I guess.
Call, man. KJ6RAY. Yeah, if your radio is also plugged into your lighter power, you're going to have that problem. Try connecting your radio straight to the battery.
Thank you very much for that. Yeah, Zach, you might try that too. I haven't had much experience with that, the mobile chargers, but I know the home chargers have a problem. Let me make sure I'm not doubling somebody. Chargers have, especially the ones with the little switching power supplies, can be extremely noisy. I'm on two various reflectors, and I hear a lot of problems with that. And by the way, for those that don't know, a reflector is on like a Yahoo group. A lot of people that have Elecraft K, the K series, are on these reflectors. They have them for all different radios. You can usually join the Yahoo group for your particular radio and get a lot of information. So that's a tip that some of you guys might want to try, guys and gals might want to try out. Let's see. Any other questions or comments, please come now.
Yeah, Mike, I think you misunderstood me. The flat pin or the flat deal that I'm talking about on the lights are the slim line connectors. They're not the pin type. They're the flat plastic ones, and they will only go in one way. So anyway, okay, KD6LAN.
Bill, I thought you were talking about the bi-pin, the fluorescent, the little four-footers. And, yeah, you can move them, 10-20 degrees, and they'll still make contact, but not very good. And that's something on the four-foot fluorescent light you have to be very careful of. Okay, any other questions or comments, please come now. WB6CLZ with Tech Tuesday. Thank you.
like.
Yeah,
because when you get any audio, you're just getting a carrier with some noise. Yeah, in reference to the guy with the 25, the FT-2500, I have one. That's what I'm using right now. And immobile. And just to see if, you know, if the charger I have would cause the same problem, I plugged it in and charged, put my phone on charge, and with the motor off, and then I just started it up, and with the motor on, there was no interference. So it's, if I were you, I got this at T-Mobile. It cost me $25, so it was, and that was about 4 years ago, so it's higher than that now. But it's probably the, something in that charger rather than in your phone or in your car system, or certainly on your radio, 86 PM.
Zach, that's something you might want to try, and maybe see if you can switch out the charger if somebody else has got one, or, you know, kind of troubleshoot it that way, or any way you can. It sounds like you may have an issue with that charger, Zach. KJ6FJE, WB6CLZ.
Yeah, I'm thinking from what one of the other fellows was saying, I might have, it might be tying through in the electrical system. I do not have the radio hooked up directly to the radio. I plugged it into an open slot on the fuse block for the main power distribution.
Yeah, please tell me what's your name and call.
Yeah, Mike, it's Bill, KD6LAN. Zach, I don't know how new your vehicle is, but I've discovered that on your newer vehicles where you have one cigarette lighter and one power port, both the same configuration, try the power port. I've discovered on my radio a little bit of white noise on the cigarette lighter, but if you plug it into the power port, for some reason, I don't know if it's the routing or different different fusing or what have you, but it seems to get a lot clearer on the power port than on the cigarette lighter port. 86LAN.
So, yeah, Zach, you might want to play musical power ports on that and see if that helps out a little bit. Yeah, you're probably picking it up on a line that's got something else in it. You know, you're getting some interference back feeding. Very possible. So play a little troubleshooting and let us know next week what you come up with. I appreciate that. A comment?
Part of this problem may be that both wires run through that the fuse block, and mine is wired straight to the firewall out to the battery terminal. I put 250 amp DC breakers over on the fender, on the inside of the fender well, and ran 10 gauge jumpers off of the terminals on the battery, and then I ran my radio hookup through the firewall out to the breakers. So mine's going straight off the battery to a set of breakers, and that may be his problem, because if he has something else that's bad in that fuse block, why, that one right there is going to feed into everything he has, 86 PM.
So another thing I might mention is with electrical anything, you know, your connections, the tightness of your connections is really a big deal. So if you've got a loose connection somewhere, a loose nut on one of the terminals, anything like that, maybe a terminal, a spade connector coming uncrimped or unsoldered, anything like that is enough to cause you problems like you're seeing there, Zach. So, yeah, just kind of put your glasses and your thinking cap on and go around and see if you can find anything like that, and that may take care of it. Any other questions or comments?
Yes, I have a question.
Hey, go ahead.
Good evening. Slight change of topic. I've heard, and Mike, you may or may not know, being the profession you're in, I've heard people say that when you install a fluorescent light, for the initial lighting of a fluorescent light, you're supposed to run it 24 hours before you shut it off to quote unquote break it in. Have you ever heard that, Mike? KI6IQA.
Give you an example. Yes, I have. We have shopping centers down on Beach Boulevard here in Orange County, and they use the T8, the smaller 8-foot T8 fluorescent lights, and they're electronic ballast, and we will have need to replace one. One of the lights will go out, and one of them will still be burning. We can put two brand new lights in, and the middle of the lamp will not light, and it'll do that for a period of time. We usually just boogie, get out of there, and then we'll come back next month and everything is fine and it's brighter than it was, and you know, everything's hunky-dory. So yes, you do have to burn those things in. We don't generally leave them on 24 hours. We just let them continue on at their regular cycle. But they do burn in. How's that, Kelly?
The person that told me this said that you would get 3 to 4 times the lifespan out of a fluorescent bulb if you turn it on for the first time it gets turned on, you turn it on and leave it on for 24 hours. So I was going through the ones in my kitchen. I mean, it seemed like every other week I was changing one, and I had never heard that, so I changed them all out and ran them for 24 hours. I haven't changed one since, and I think it's been about a year. And, you know, I was changing them. Just seemed like it was way too frequent. I also switched from the older style, bigger 4-foot, to the new, the thinner one. They're only about half as big around. But just curious. Thanks. Good input. KSXIQA.
Yeah, I make money on them. So I want them to burn out. No, not really. But anyway, yeah, I had never heard that either. And I've been in the lighting business for 25 years, and as an electrician, added about 10 or 15 to that. So, yeah, I had never heard that one. But I'm sure it's true. I just have never really heard that anywhere. Of course, I don't read all the data and everything that comes with the stuff. I'm the type of guy that flies an airplane without reading the... the manual. Hi. Any other questions and comments, please come out.
Yeah, this is KJ6MOC, Mark. I'm an electrician as well. What? I never heard of this. Could you elaborate more on what is a burn-in?
Kelly was saying that, let me make sure we're not doubling here. He was saying that when you put in a fluorescent light, that you should run it for 24 hours, leave it on for 24 hours and let it burn in. I have never heard that either. And like I say, I'm a lighting contractor. That's just about all we do now is maintenance and lighting maintenance and repair and that sort of thing. And I have never heard of that, but it does make sense. We've worked in shopping centers and had lights that would barely light. And we would come back the next day or the next month or the next week, and after they burned in, they're doing fine. But we get pretty good life out of them. Let's see. Yeah, Mark, how's that sound? And what type of electrical work do you do?
I do residential. I did transmitter work. I did transmitter work for some local radio stations in Los Angeles for about 15 years. And now I do pretty much residential stuff. But I never heard that. And that's cool hearing from you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Never heard it until I heard it from Kelly, so you can thank Kelly for that one. Okay, any other questions? And you know, I will try that. We'll see if we can leave one on. I've got some bulbs here in the garage that need to be changed. I'll leave that one on and see if it lasts any longer. But you know, in a residential situation, it has to last a heck of a long time, usually. Anyway, any other questions or comments here? This is WB6CLZ, Mike for Tech Tuesday. And I didn't get your name and call. I'm not getting a good signal from you, but go ahead, and maybe somebody up in Big Bear can hear you a little bit better. I'm just not copying you. Phil or Ray, how about Phil? Are you copying him? And maybe you can either relay or see if you can help him out.
Comment. He said when he puts his headphones on the base station, or, I forgot. One other station has in, I guess, a handheld or something that hears a hum in the background, and he wanted to know if that was normal on a repeater. And that was why I'm in Riverside, and apparently he's in Riverside because I had him crystal clear on the input, 86 PL.
Should not hear a hum. It may be a connection on your phone, on your plug. If you have another set of headphones, try that. I have one connection on one of my radios here that's like that. If it's got a bad connection somewhere, and if you move it wrong or wiggle it wrong, it has a hum. No, that is not normal. And I'm really not hearing you, sir, so we're going to have to relay through Harold or somebody that is.
I'm making the repeater.
I hope that helped you out a little bit, but probably a loose connection. You should really not hear a hum. Any other questions and comments?
Comment. The times you'll hear the PL on there, if it's not been damped down, occasionally I'll hear it on Clara. And it's just a real light hum in the background with the headphones. He's not getting any ambient noise. So anything that's going on is coming right through the headphones and not being interfered with. AD6PL.
Definitely not right. Any other questions or comments?
Just as a point of demonstration, I'm now on a handheld in the living room in front of a rather large flat-screen TV. And you guys are coming through crystal clear, and I should be transmitting crystal clear. So I tried the same radio before I left the garage, and when I could hear you, I could hardly understand you. The minute I turned off the lights, and the lights, it got a little bit better, and turned off the TV, and turned the lights back on, it was about the same. And when I came in here and turned off the lights, it was crystal clear. So there's a definite, I don't know if you want to call it coalition, or there's a definite something between the fluorescent lights and the flat screen TV in there that this flat screen TV doesn't cause on the handhelds. KD6LAN.
I've got such a bad signal down here tonight that I wouldn't have been able to hear it before. I can barely hear everybody talking. I don't know. Maybe there's still some dust in the air from the Santa Ana winds we've been having. But, yeah, I've got a terrible signal down here. My tower is cranked up all the way. Well, I would think that, and I haven't been to Radio Shack in a while and poking around, but maybe there is an inline or a plug-in filter that you could put in and give a try. I would talk to those guys and see. If not, Google it and see if there's something that's an inline filter you can just plug your TV into and plug it into the outlet, the filter that is plugged into the outlet, and that may help the TV issue. As for the lights, I know that there was a filter that we mentioned here a while back, and I don't know if, you know, I've never really tried it, but I'm usually in a shopping center or an outdoor environment to where I don't even worry about that sort of thing. I know that I had fluorescent lights here with the gear a while back and never had any problems with the electronic or ballast or anything, but I've got a pretty good ground system here that I've got, like, ground rod, so I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But hopefully we'll get that solved one of these days. Any other questions or comments, please come now.
This is KJ6MOC, Mark. Once again, what about a power conditioner? A power conditioner for the audio and for the television. How would that be?
Provided the power supply and the power conditioner is not a good power supply. Yeah, I would think so. And make sure that it's Part 15 certified and all that. But I would think that would do. Or a UPS, maybe possibly running on battery. Shut everything else down and try a UPS on a battery that would run it a few minutes and see if everything would go away. You might want to give that a try.
Roger. Yeah, I was thinking more like, you know, like a Furman power conditioner or something like that, maybe a Monster or something like that. But yeah, okay. Roger that. Just KJMO6. Standing by.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Appreciate that. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that power conditioner, but I don't get into that area very often. I've got a UPS here made by APC, and it's a 750 amp hour. And it seems to hold up everything pretty well when things go down, at least time enough for me to shut everything down. Any other questions and comments, please come now. File. Mike.
No, I was just wondering, in your garage with your TV lights and all that, have you checked the polarity and make sure that you don't have the neutral and hot reversed?
On what, the radio?
Your electrical wiring in your garage, you might be getting static if you've got the polarity wrong on your 110 lines going into your garage. If you've got the neutral and the positive backwards.
Well, I haven't checked it, but let me just add this, the guy that I bought the house from was a master electrician, and he built the house. So I would hope he didn't wire it wrong. Yeah, I hear you. MOC6, Mark.
Anything's possible. I'm a master mechanic, and I've made mistakes before, too.
You do, though, Bill. Next time I'm up, I'll bring a tick tracer, and all you have to do is run it over your black wire, and if your black wire screams that it's hot, then you know it's hot. We run into that all the time. I haven't done much of that work lately, but in apartments especially, where you have outlets that have reverse polarity, and, it's pretty common. You get the handyman putting the outlets in, and he doesn't care whether the black wire goes to the white or the black wire goes to the copper. Sometimes we run into that. And, I can see how that could be an issue. Thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate that comment. Let's see. Any other comments? Please come now.
Question.
Again, too, after that. time I didn't get that. I've got terrible reception here tonight.
Question. On those, all that connections you have, especially on those lights, have you tried spraying everything good with, wiping it down with 400 sandpaper, all your contacts, and then spraying a little contact cleaner in there and see if that gets rid of it? AD60.
In answer to your question, no. The last time we did anything, Mike was up here on the ladder with me, and everything seemed to check out okay. So I don't know that that's what it is. It just seems to be that it's a lot of static, both on the receive and, from what I've been told, some white noise on the transmit end. So I don't know. I've just learned to live with it, so to speak. And if I'm in the garage and I have to talk, if there's an emergency or something like that on the one-way radio, I've learned to either use the other base station radio that I have hooked up in there, or walk outside the garage.
Whenever you get up there again, take some Q-tips and 400 sandpaper and sand the little terminals on the bulb and get all the corrosion off of those and wipe that down with a clean cloth. If you can get in, just roll up the sandpaper and gently wipe in where the little terminals go, if you can get to it, and then wipe it out with a Q-tip, spray some contact cleaner in it, and see if that doesn't take away a lot of it. Because you're probably getting a lot of popping in there because it's not making a good contact. Those things oxidize after they've been out there a little while, especially in the outside area like a garage. 86 PM.
Well, maybe I'll comment too then. Shut off the power if you can.
Well, I'm almost ready to take and pull the dang thing down completely and just put up a couple, three fixtures of fluorescent floodlights and alleviate that problem completely. So, anyway, KD6, all I am.
KD6,
TLC. Yeah, who's this?
It's John. I've been listening as I'm getting closer to the machine's range. You guys talking about fluorescent light interference?
Here we are. What's your call? And go ahead with your comment.
Yeah, the call is KE6TLT. My name is John here. And in my experience, in my garage with my Radio Shack, poor quality tombstone lamp holders. Let's see, what else was it? It was the Wago connectors, the friction connectors inside the makeup of the belly pan of the fixtures. And on my neighbor's interference, he had his polarity on his AC incorrect. So it might be more than just one thing.
John, I appreciate that. Yeah, as an ex-industrial troubleshooter, sometimes those are the hardest ones to find when it's more than one problem, because you're looking for one and think you've got it, and then you don't. The tombstones are an issue. You want to use the best you can find, and a lot of times those cheapy fluorescents do have those. Let me make sure I'm not doubling. Those push-in connectors, I would not recommend them. I think that's what you're talking about. I only use wire nuts with a spring in them. If they don't have the little spring in it, if they're just a little plastic wire nut, throw it away. The push-in connectors, throw them away. If you change outlets with the push-in connectors, don't use them. Wrap it around just the proper way, and and either use the outlets that you're tightened on the connections and have them wrapped around on the terminals, or use the ones that you can put the wire in and crimp down on them with the screw. I definitely would not use any type of a push-in connector or push-in terminals on your outlets. That's very important. I've seen quite a few cases of almost fires from those push-in connectors. Half of an outlet burned away. We had a lady that was vacuuming once and was into an outlet that had those push-in connectors, and it literally caught on fire when she was vacuuming. So very bad things. Do not use them. Any other questions or comments? File. Mike.
I've seen where they put the receptacles and everything in black to black, white to white and everything, but the problem wasn't in the receptacle itself, it was in the box. Somebody switched it around in the main box as to, you know, the whole garage itself may be backwards. You know, just another thought from KJ6FYL.
Usually what I see is on the downstream connectors. Usually they're pretty good in the box, and the downstream connector is where they reverse them. We've had that quite a number of times. I have a load tester that I plug in, and it tells polarity. It electronically simulates a 0 through 20 amp load, switchable, and kind of works pretty good on that kind of stuff. But, you know, one of these just little cheapy plug-in testers with the lights will tell you if your polarity is reversed. Then you just go back towards the panel and keep plugging it in until it's right. And if not, then it is in the panel. But I've seen an awful lot of that. Thanks for the comment, Mike. I appreciate it. Any other questions or comments, please come down.
Little yellow tester works wonders, especially if you're in a hurry or whatever. All right, KJ6FIL.
So we do. We use Cindy is the retired test engineer. She does my testing high. But yeah, that's what she does. She plugs the little plug in at first just to make sure that everything is cool and crazy, because we don't want to blow up a $400 load tester. And then she goes through and does the load test on all of the circuits when we change outlets and plugs in an apartment or something like that. So yeah, it is polarity is very important, especially with the computers and things. Polarity and ground, I might add, very important. Especially with the computerized stuff we have today. Any other questions or comments?
Music TVZ.
Ray, I thought I'd warn everybody out. Go ahead.
About the plasma TV. I have a plasma TV. It tears up this radio that I'm talking on right now, which is a ICOM 746 Pro on 80 meters or 75 meters, but it does not bother here on the repeater at all.
Interesting. Yeah, I have heard nasty things about plasma TVs as far as neighbor TVs and two house down neighbor TVs and such. Luckily, I'm knocking on wood as I'm saying this, but I don't have that issue here or at the place up at Big Bear. But I've heard a lot of guys talking about it on the air, and it seems like they are a problem. Well, thanks for that comment, Ray. I appreciate it. Anybody else, please come down. Okay, one more chance before I close her down. This is WB6CLZ with Tech Tuesday. Any more questions or comments? QST, QST, QST. This is Mike, WB6CLZ, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net. Closing the net at 1,958 hours. And let's see, returning the repeater to normal use. I'd like to thank everyone for listening in and participating, and hope that you can join us again next week. And really, thanks everybody for the comments. I appreciate that. I can't talk nonstop. I just run out of things to say. So everybody pulling in there and helping out with their comments and questions really helps me out when Tom's not here. So I really appreciate it. This is WB6CLZ, and I will be clear. 7-3 off. Have a great evening.